All right, so I'm delighted to be talking with Tara Rigetti from the University of Wyoming, and we're going to be talking about one of her recent pieces, the Incidental Environmental Agency, which is coming out in the Utah Law Review. That is coming out probably in just a couple of days here in mid-2020, but it's already up on SSRN, and you can see it linked there. And I also have a paper that Tara is the lead author on with Hannah Wiseman as well, called The New Oil and Gas Governance. Both of these papers are looking at how oil and gas regulation is changing in response to increasing concerns about the environment and about the climate. So it's a very timely paper. We're delighted to talk about it here on Energy Trade-Offs. So thanks for talking with us, Tara.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
So let's start by just, if you could describe that paper, the Incidental Environmental Agency, what's it about, what are the trends you're seeing, and what are some of your takeaways?
So this paper started as a project looking at various efforts to regulate oil and gas development at the conservation agency level, and sort of evolved to looking at the environmental regulatory role of conservation agencies. So conservation agencies are state agencies that regulate all manner of oil and gas production. They regulate siting. They may regulate things like fracking, setbacks from schools and other sensitive habitat, the spacing and density within which wells can be placed. There were a number of different initiatives in all sorts of states, particularly in Colorado, where voters were looking to directly pass new laws that would, say, increase the distance of setbacks. Most of those were unsuccessful. And so I started looking at different ways that advocates were trying to influence and make conservation regulation more restrictive, and then how legislatures have responded by modifying state conservation law. Waste of a resource in most conservation law has actually been considered keeping it in the ground. Any action that would result in oil and gas not being produced would be prohibited, because the goal was to maximize the amount of production for the greatest use for the most people over the longest period of time. And so most of the early conservation rules developed for the purposes of encouraging efficient production and assuring that wells were going to be drilled, that the oil and gas would be sold into efficient markets. And the things that it limited were things like using oil and gas for manufacture of carbon black, or maybe overproduction in a way that would damage the reservoir and mean that you couldn't have production. So this is often counterintuitive for people who think about environmental law when you say that conservation regulation is meant to encourage the maximum production of oil and gas. But that has been changing pretty rapidly within maybe the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I think that's important to understand, is that from the perspective of a landowner, certainly you want the oil and gas companies to produce as much as possible, because that's, the landowners are mostly compensated through a royalty, that's a share of production, so the more that's produced, the better. And so states on state land, the similar dynamic applies to all production within the state because of state severance taxes. So basically, states just in general get more money when there is more production on within their state. And so as a result, states have focused, and oil and gas law historically has focused, on getting as much production as possible without the kind of waste, which in this context means basically producing in a way that will lead to less production in the future. So how are you seeing states that are starting to incorporate environmental concerns into their oil and gas regulation? How are you finding they do that?
So the frontier issue that most states address first is the issue of setbacks. As you've seen more and more development happening in suburban areas, the Barnett Shale was sort of the, in this region, was one of the sort of leading there, but also in the Denver area and in suburbs and around Fort Collins and Greeley. And people started saying, oh my gosh, right, there's now this oil well and it's maybe 250 feet or 500 feet from my house, and it is drilling 24 hours a day. There's dust, there's light, there's noise, there's truck traffic, and then you have an industrial facility that's next to maybe a stream or a school or an occupied residence. And so the first place where I really saw commissions in my research and in many cases voters and legislatures addressing this was saying, we need to put a bit more distance between these industrial activities and these other resources that we value. And then that has continued to, you know, expand to protection and consultation on a wide range of issues, which have really limited the places where oil and gas can be developed, as well as the time frames during which it can be developed.
Because in the suburban areas, you mentioned the Barnett here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, or sort of the Front Range in Colorado, those, they're just, if the setbacks get big enough, it's very hard to actually place your well. And you might think well placement wasn't as big of an issue with the ability to directionally drill, but if the setbacks are big enough, and there's enough buildings around, at some point there's just literally no place to put the well. Is that right?
Exactly. And I do think that well placement is actually one of those sort of critical environmental issues as well, where you are actually choosing to site an industrial facility, which typically doesn't go through a state industrial siting process. Can be a big determinant of the impact it's going to have on the people and environments around which it's located.
Now, it's now gone beyond setbacks. So there are new sort of environmental limits on oil and gas production that Colorado is looking at, mm-hmm. and it's not just setbacks, right? So what are the other areas where we see these environmental concerns start to play a role in oil and gas production?
So in 2019, and you and I've written on this,
yeah.
the Colorado legislature completely overhauled its conservation statute. So even though these voter initiatives, for the most part, were unsuccessful, the governor had placed a few orders that directed the commission to consider rulemaking. But the legislature really almost from the ground up modified their rule to create, or their conservation statute, to put in place a number of different requirements. And rulemaking on some of those is still ongoing. But these requirements required broad consultation with parks and wildlife agencies, much more involved consultation processes with homeowners and affected landowners and municipalities. It actually basically statutorily forewent preemption and said that they were going to allow surface impacts to be regulated by these local governments.
So state preemption. So in Colorado, you couldn't have, before this, a locality couldn't do something if the state had said it was all right, but now basically the localities can adopt their own restrictions, including bigger setbacks or anything they want.
Bigger setbacks, requirements for light, noise, for other sort of environmental impacts, creating new processes. Those, in turn, have led to much more utilization of negotiated special use permit or memorandums of understandings. The new statute directed the...
Memorandums of understanding between a locality and the oil and gas company operating there?
Right, so that they would enter into a contract that would set forth the... you know, terms of development and potentially require investments on behalf of the company, and then restrict the operating conditions further beyond what you would see just in the commission rules. And then you also had the statute directed the Department of Environmental Quality to adopt more sort of restrictive and to consider different air quality regulations. And so two other things that I think were really interesting with the statute is that it created a cumulative impacts assessment process, and the rulemaking for that is ongoing, but that would really require the commission not just to look at underground waste, which we talked about, but to look at whether a proposed oil and gas development would have cumulative impacts that would be damaging to the environment, to health, safety, and welfare, to wildlife, including impacts of oil and gas development over the region, not just on a well-by-well basis. And then I think, at least in my opinion, sort of the most radical step they took was to say that the commission in certain cases, if they found that the cumulative impacts were too great, that they could prohibit development even if it might result in non-production. And that's really a 180-degree turn from what you had before, where the commission was trying to prevent non-production, even acknowledging that that would have an environmental cost.
So, you know, and it also, this law also did, you know, sort of made fundamental changes at a philosophical level to the commission itself, right, in terms of the membership of the commission. Is that right, in terms of the expertise that the commissioners bring?
Right. The statute also tried to address what was perceived as potential capture by the agency of an over representation of oil and gas interests. So they now require some of the commission members to be experts in environmental fields, and have specifically limited the number of members who can have had experience in the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. And California has adopted similar requirements in terms of beginning to reform the makeup of the commission, whereas many commissions are usually the state geologist and state engineer, and maybe several technical professionals who have been involved in oil and gas industry. We're actually seeing these agencies being remade more in the shape of an environmental agency with environmental expertise rather than expertise in the reservoir and production side.
So, you know, that's fascinating. I wonder, is there any kind of institutional resistance to this? So, you know, one thing, during the Obama administration, one thing that frequently happened was that some of the energy or infrastructure agencies like FERC or the Army Corps of Engineers at times was a little bit resistant to the suggestion that they should take more environmental concerns into their decision-making. I know that there was controversies between both EPA and the Army Corps and EPA and FERC, where the Obama-era Environmental Protection Agency thought that those agencies weren't doing enough to take environmental concerns, and the agencies like FERC said, well, you know, that's not really our job. So, you know, do you think there has been resistance among those oil and gas commissions to taking on these sort of new concerns?
I do think so, actually one of the things that I look at in the paper is the way that courts have responded when commissions have, for example, refused citizen petitions for rulemaking, when they have approved certain actions over environmental objections by land or mineral owners. And courts, while the conservation agencies themselves have been a little bit resistant towards adopting this and expanding into more environmental areas within sort of their enabling acts, courts have taken a more liberal look at this and said, actually, these are legitimate concerns that potentially should be considered.
In our new article with Hannah Wiseman, certainly one of the one thing we look at is how this has happened a lot at the federal level, which is to say that the federal courts are asking the permitting agencies and the federal government to do more consideration of climate concerns and environmental concerns when they permit these oil and gas projects.
And I think you're seeing that at the state level as well. And one of the things that, one of the reasons I wanted to look at this was to invite people to take more notice of the environmental regulatory role of these state agencies and opportunities at the State Conservation Agency for environmental advocacy, as well as for collaborative processes that might find new solutions to achieve environmental goals while still allowing development to go forward. As you mentioned early, we've had these divergent pathways where you have stricter and more stringent environmental regulations coming from some agencies, whereas meanwhile these environmental agencies are permitting, the conservation agencies are permitting record numbers of wells. And I think we're seeing those things converge, and that creates a lot of different opportunities to look at these conservation agencies as a very active and important player in the environmental regulatory space.
So one long-running theoretical question in the administration of environmental and energy law is whether it is better to have an agency that's mostly focused on environmental concerns and a separate agency that's mostly focused on management of natural resources, or whether it's better to integrate those two concerns. So I wonder, how does your paper play into that? Is it, are you suggesting that maybe there's a new trend towards integrating those functions, or is it a little bit different because the environmental regulator is still there, you're just sort of have on an integrated consideration in the energy regulator, but then you still kind of have that external check of the environmental regulator?
So I did look at this in my paper, and one of the things that I thought was interesting, and of course because these are state agencies, you have a diverse range of approaches that are happening. You have some agencies that haven't had their statutes changed but are starting to look a little bit more in their normal duties at the environmental impacts. And then you have Colorado on the other side, which really has gone towards that convergence. But meanwhile has given counties this new regulatory role to which to some extent may counteract that while still keeping the environmental regulator in place and having a lot more consultation. I think there is a hazard, though, that like we saw with Deepwater Horizon, that by completely reforming conservation agencies towards this environmental function and changing their makeup, you may dilute their capacity to consider some of the underground waste issues and things that those roles they've traditionally filled of regulating production and particularly assuring the correlative rights and, which are the rights of other reservoir owners and preventing waste, while not necessarily achieving these broad-based environmental aims. Ultimately, I think there is a hazard to having a conservation agency making decisions about who gets to produce where based on assessments of cumulative impacts and thinking about things like climate. So in my article, I argue that the conservation agencies already have a lot of tools at their disposal through unitization, through proration, which I know you've written about and are writing about now, and through sort of surface setbacks and other things to really protect the environment and make good environmental decisions without stepping into that role of becoming a climate regulator, which really isn't what they were intended to be.
So the last thing I was wondering about is, where would you look as states? You mentioned, obviously we talked a lot about Colorado. You mentioned California. Are there any other states that you see on the horizon as being the ones that are most likely to next be a laboratory democracy on new oil and gas conservation regulations?
So California and Colorado certainly are on the cusp of that. I think we're seeing some things in Ohio, like I mentioned, that's being driven more in the courts. West Virginia also has had some recent court cases that have really questioned some of these things and are looking at conservation regulation. And then Pennsylvania has been a leader in that area as well, particularly because of their environmental rights amendment in their constitution, which has been growing as an advocacy tool to look at the decisions that agencies are making and how that affects the Pennsylvania constitutional public trust over natural resources. And so those are the places that I've been sort of watching to see how this evolves. You have other states like Texas and Wyoming, which, although there are rulemakings in both places that I think could impact, have environmental impacts, those agencies are functioning much more in line with how they have traditionally.
All right. Well, Tara, it's been so good to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.